There should be some more around here. We want to get the test turned in.
Always do that, try to get some book out. But he's the one who makes up the test anyway, usually, but I'll see if I can. Or could you take a baby clock in the morning?
The one you had in class?
The one you had? I'll give you the paper on the other one.
The one that you actually got the paper
on? Yeah. I'll give you that one. Sure. Good again. If you have occasion to lay on them in my box or have them, put them in my box, and I'll get them any time I get to do them. See, but I want to be sure by next time.
Get your test paper that we had. Now let me see. I better have you just turn in your test paper that you were supposed to hand in today. Test papers you're supposed to have for today in the psalm. Turn them in quickly right now. as quickly as you can. Then turn to the Psalms and we'll see what we can pick up here toward getting up to where we belong. We'll have a few more classes yet this next week that we can pick up some more of the Psalms. Quickly as you can, please. Are there any more? Psalm 59, we had noticed up in verse 6, they return at evening, they make a noise like a dog, they go round about the city, they belch out with their mouths, swords are in their lips, because they say the Lord does not hear, nobody knows what we're doing. Then in the 14th verse, at evening, let them return. Now, the first one had to do with what they're doing back there, but typical of the same thing that they're going to be doing in the end time. And then as it comes on down, where it speaks that the Lord will consume them, and he will have his desire upon the enemies, and at evening it repeats it. In the 14th verse, let them return, make a noise like a dog, go round about the city. That is, when Satan is loosed again, and even before that, when they're making war against the saints, and then at the end of the millennium, likewise. Let them wander up and down for meat and grudge if they be not satisfied. That's what's happening now. That's what they're concerning right now. They're demanding right now against Israel. They're demanding that she... They said they were going to push her into the sea and started the war, insisted on it, and now they're asking if she turned back everything that she lost in the war. Funny kind of war where you go out and make war against somebody and you lose and then you demand that they give you back what they took. But that's the way they're doing it. That's the way they'll always do it. So they're doing that. But I will sing of thy power, yea, I will sing aloud of thy mercy in the morning. Now that at evening and in the morning has to do with that evening, that is in the end of time, when this prophecy comes to pass, both in the first time and then after it's over with. But the latter part was only in a very small part when they did come back rejoicing because God had brought them back out of Babylon, brought them back into their own country. Then they could sing again the songs of Zion. They had hung their harps upon the willow down in Babylon, but now when he brings them back, as they come back up, in spite of the circumstances, in spite of the conditions, in spite of the troubles they're still having, because this is not the end of it. This is only just a foretaste and a partial fulfillment for them back there. They could sing again the songs of Zion and did begin to praise and glorify the Lord. But now in the end of time, in the evening time, when that Zechariah speaks of, that's not back there at all. That is way down here in the end, and it's going to be all over again at the evening time they'll return, but in the morning I will sing of thy power, yea, I will sing aloud of thy mercy in the morning. That is when the new day dawns, when the Son of Righteousness has risen up as a shake terribly the earth and take to himself his great kingdom and all his saints with him, as we see the cherubim coming with him in the very first of Ezekiel. That's the picture of the very end time after the victory is all over. But then he shows you who they are and what they're doing here. But now up here in the end of time, in Revelation 4, we see them again round about the throne. Now they're singing. See, that's their morning. That's their morning. And then eventually, when the whole thing is finished and Satan is cast into the lake of fire and the wicked are destroyed, that's the morning also when the song will be everlasting unto God. So the evening and the morning lay opposite one another in both cases. Although the morning was not seen up above, the morning is way down here in the end. The real morning is way down. But a very slight indication of that thing was seen when he brought them back out of Babylon. They began to sing praises unto God, even though their troubles were great yet. But in the end of time, they'll sing praises in the morning, and they will forever magnify his name. For thou hast been my defense and refuge in the day of my trouble. And inasmuch as that time of trouble in the end of time is going to be specifically and more certainly Judah, because she has been out and is just now coming back in. So Daniel, in the Daniel 12:1, says it's a time of Jacob's trouble. You see, a time of great trouble when the great prince stands for the children of his people. And then in Jeremiah 30:7, it calls it the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. So here it says, thou hast been my defense and refuge in the day of trouble. And that word defense so often in here means my high tower, my strong place, my high place, my hiding place, and all of that. So that's what Jesus is unto them. He fights for them as in the day of battle, as it is in Zechariah 9:12. Unto thee, so those two scriptures, Daniel 12:1 with verse 16, and Jeremiah 30:7. Unto thee, O my strength. You see, God is called their strength. The Lord, he is their strength. And he's called strength in several other prophetic places. Unto thee, O my strength, will I sing, for God is my defense. There's that defense again. High place, strong tower, hiding place. And the God of my mercy. Now to the chief musician upon Shushan Edith, another prayer, Miktam of David. This is also a good example, that Psalm 60, of so many conditions in these titles. Is the chief musician, and upon Shushan Edith, to whom and for whose interest, and it is a miktam or a prayer, and it names David, and its purpose is a mass skill to teach. See, they're all in there. All those different titles that we see scattered among the different ones, they're all here in this one, practically all of them, right here in a group. They've got all those things in there. To the magician, to the end, or to the chief choir, you see, of praise. And Shushan Edith, that's to the bride. The reason I say bride is because it's singular. Shushan is lily. Lily. It's the lily of testimony. The lily of testimony, or the lily of witness. It's and there are lilies, and there is a lily. the lily of the valley, the particular one, is the bride, singular. But the lilies include not only the bride, but the church, as you remember in the Song of Solomon. The lilies are all the virgins. But the lily is the bride herself. This is of special concern to the bride, to those who are overcomers with God, to those who have trusted and believed God, to those who have the victory, to those who overcome, as David trusted God and overcame his enemies and sustained his borders and enlarged his kingdom. That's exactly the position of the overcomer. So it speaks of the bride, Shushan Edith, the bride of testimony, or the lily of testimony, and not bride, but lily, which is the bride of witness or of testimony. To when he strove, that is David, when he strove with Aram Naharaim and with Aram Zobah, when Joab returned and smote of Edom in the Valley of Salt 12,000. Now, you'll find about that in 2 Samuel 8, 5, 13, and 10. 8, 5, 10, 13. With 1 Chronicles 18, 12. You'll need that. 1 Chronicles 18, 12. If you won't understand it, you'll look like contradictions. And with 1 Kings 11, 15 to 25. Now, we don't have time to go back and see what all of those things say, but you study them, and then if you have any questions on them, you may ask. But this is the time that it's talking about 1040 B.C. is when is the happening. Now, there is a place where David is inspired, and in the inspiration of these songs concerning any of these experiences or events or prophecies of those times, you'll also find that there is a lesson and a teaching for us of the end time. And that's the far more important. That's why I always try to relate this not to something that happened back there only, as is so often done, but rather, what does it mean to us up here now? Because the end of these things and the full fulfillment is much more important than any partial fulfillment or something that's already in the past and done and therefore cannot be remedied or changed. But up here, we can have the advantage of the teaching. They could back there too, because much of this referred to things ahead of them. And when they came, many of them undoubtedly were benefited by it, greatly benefited by it. And also, even though they did not see it at the time, after it was over with, they were like the apostles. After the resurrection, then we understood that we had done these things unto him. But before, they didn't know. So even those who did not know when they saw it coming, so that they might escape, they nevertheless found out that God's word was sure, that it did come to pass just like he said, and that therefore he was to be trusted. And that's our position also now. To look back and see what he did there and saw that it happened, it will also happen the way God said up here. And then we have an occasion to find out how it happened. You'll find out back there that it says David did this. It said Joab did this. It will say that Abishai did this. Until it becomes, well, now who did do it? Did David do it, or did Abishai do it, or did Joab do it? They all did it. They all did it, but they didn't all do it the way it first appears until you read the rest of the scriptures that I give you, and then it will explain to you why. But this 12,000 here, for instance, does not. It refers to Abishai. Portion of it refers to Joab. Other portions of it refer to David, but it was all under David, and Joab was his chief captain, and Abishai, Joab's son, was one of the chief men of great mention at that same time. All right, let's see what it says. And this is of interest to the bride. Special interest to the bride of witness, to those who are his faithful witnesses unto the end. O God, thou hast cast us off. Thou hast scattered us. Thou hast been displeased. O turn thyself to us again. That was not so at the time David wrote this, neither was it so immediately after that time. In fact, he just now reestablishing his borders and coming into great power. It is true that the Syrians had made overtures, and even in the time of Saul and in the early time of David, and they had taken, they had gone down through and had taken a great portion of Edom. And then with their connection with Edom, they were both of them against Israel. Edom and Assyria, I mean Syria, not Assyria, but Syria are both now against David at this time. Clear from the very northern part, clear down through the Jordan, clear down into Edom, Esau country, the Dead Sea, because it said in the Valley of Salt, the Valley of Salt lies at the very southern end of the Dead Sea. But the other portion, Aram, the Aramites are north. They're way up there, north of Damascus. And in fact, the Aram is the Assyrians. They and their territory now. They have taken a portion of that territory that David and Saul first obtained, but now they've overrun it and they're in possession of it. Clear up on the Euphrates, as they come in on the north of Damascus, clear on up to the Euphrates River, and Aram, Naharam, the word Aram is the same as Syria. The Syrians were the Aramites. Naharim means the Aram Naharim means the Aram of the two rivers, or Aram between in Mesopotamia between the two rivers, that is the Euphrates and the Tigris. They pushed their territory way back to the borders of Assyria, even pushing Assyria back, before eventually Syria came down and took all that country then later. But the Aram Naharim is the Aram of the two rivers, and the Aram Zobah is the nearer land between the Orontes River and the Euphrates. It is that nearer portion. And both of these cities, this Aram, Naharam, and Zobah, lay right in there north of Damascus up to the Euphrates in the northern part. But the Valley of Salt is clear down at the south end of the Dead Sea. So this has to do with what he did with the Assyrians up there and what he did with the Assyrians down here, because the Assyrians are in control way down in Edom. And the Assyrians go down then to help down there also, and many of them are killed down there. Many of the Assyrians are killed up here. So that David is way up here, Joab may be way down here, and Abishai in the Valley of Salt. And while it mentions David, actually, David was possibly way up here, principally with the Syrians, whereas Joab and Abishai are down the other, although there's nothing that says that David couldn't have made a run down there to help them also at some time. But that will explain the differences that you run into. Now, here's the situation. God had not at this time cast them off, but this becomes a prophecy of when he will cast them off. And like as he gave them their territory here, gave them power over their enemies, and they slaughtered them with a great slaughter, so in the fulfillment of this other prophecy in that time, it will also be fulfilled. And that's where the bride comes in. because it reaches clear down to the end of time when he finally, completely overcomes Moab and Edom, the Ammonites, the Amorites, the Syrians, the Zidonians, and all the rest of them round about, takes every one of them under control, and Judah reigns in his land, and Israel, the remnant with it. O God, thou hast cast us off, thou hast scattered us, thou hast been displeased, O turn thyself to us again. Thou hast made the earth to tremble, thou hast broken it, heal the breaches thereof, for it shaketh. Now you see, all those terms are found in other prophets. You'll recognize them. He raises up to shake terribly the earth. He does break their power of the enemy. He does cause the earth to tremble and to shake, clear to the ends of the earth. And he heals the breaches that he made in the land of his own people and brings his own people back in. See, all of that's fulfilled down in the end time. Down the end time. Not in David's time. David didn't have the problem. He had only that problem. God gave him that victory there at that time. And then his kingdom became a kingdom of peace. And in Solomon's time, they were having no more wars to speak of at all. They extended their borders clear on out to the Euphrates, clear to territory of the Chaldeans. Almost with a perfect reign, complete reign, but not quite. That's left for when Jesus gives them all of that land that he spoke of. And that will happen. God had told Abraham, I'll give you. Now, you look, he says, he was down in Shechem at that time, right in the middle of Palestine, in the land of Canaan. He said, now you look to the north and the south, the east and the west. I'll give you everything that you can see. I'm going to give it to you and to your seed forever. Forever. But they never actually had it. They almost had it under David and Saul. Especially under Saul. And in a time of peace. They almost had it, but not quite. All of that fell through because that was only typical of what was coming, because they were not perfect. They were only perfected in Christ, and he alone has been ordained to bring this in and fulfill it. Pardon?
What territory did not they have?
That whole country from the river of Egypt clear to the Babylon territory and the Euphrates.
You talking about what we call the Phoenicians?
No. On just at this edge of the Sinai Peninsula, possibly, the river of Egypt there was a river there that was called the river of Egypt, not necessarily the Nile. But the Eden did include possibly the Nile, clear down. All that territory included all that. But the river of Egypt possibly included that portion down in there, right where they are trying to make them push back to at least now. And they may do that, and they won't object to doing that. If they can get a peace term back to the river of Egypt, but leave them an outlet to the Gulf of Aqaba, they'll do it. Israel will do it. Because that's all God gave them. They're not wanting Egypt, see? That's all God gave them. That's all they'll do. But they are not going to give them back all that they're asking for. I'm sure of that. But now, in the end time, though, he has given them all the nations and all the whole face of the earth under their power. But their land, of their particular land there, for Judah, for instance, and Israel together, as Israel in the end time, Judah coming in particular, that he might have his the Lord's portion. The Lord's portion is in Judah. See? And because he's of Judah, therefore the Lord will reign there and bring Judah in particular. That's the time of Judah's time. And his portion's in the earth, but ours is much better. Israel's portion is in the heavenlies. Except for those who didn't make it in, they'll become like the rest of them that fled down into Judah. they will also go over into Israel, and they'll all be Israel together, as the others were in aforetime. You see, we've already got a forepicture of it when they did that. When they took Israel out, many of them fled into Judah and remained there with them. Well, now, then the others have been coming in through the gospel. I'm speaking largely, the majority of them coming in through the gospel. They become first, therefore. They went out first, but Judah was first to meet the gospel. But then they become last to get in. The first should be last and the last first. So it's just reversed because they had the first opportunity to come in. Now the others, they had an opportunity and they fled down into Judah and they came into Christ first also there. But that was largely Israel. Largely Israel, not Judah. That's all Benjamin and Ephraim and Manasseh and such parts of the Levites as who accepted Christ, they went in first. And the Jews hesitatingly after, but at first certain Jews, because it was to the Jew first, and then when the nation rejected him, they became last, they were cast out. Judah brought in by the gospel, the others are blinded so they can't even see it, and he has given them a heart of resentment against it, but now they're turning. They know they need God like they never, and they'll find out they need him worse than they ever thought they did, and he will bring them in. Now, that's what we're looking at here, is a type of that very same thing and the end of it. Thou hast made the earth to tremble, thou hast broken it. Heal the breaches thereof, for it shaketh. And Jesus will heal the breaches. He also will heal Judah. He also will take away his sins. Thou hast showed thy people hard things. Thou hast made us to drink the wine of astonishment. Nothing of this has ever happened to him when this was written. But it's a prophecy. Prophecy. And they did drink it. They did have that problem. We've just seen it. Isaiah 51:22-33. Thou hast given a banner to them that fear thee. And we've already seen that banner in Psalm 25:7. But also the Song of Solomon 6:4. His banner over us is love. To them that fear thee. See, as it says in Malachi. With Psalm 19:9. That it may be displayed because of the truth. That's because of his word. The love of God, that love, the banner that he put over, the banner of love, is displayed in the truth. That is the gospel. When Jesus pours out his Holy Spirit upon us and God dwells in his people like he said he would, he writes his laws in their minds and in their hearts that they may do them, and he will take away their sin like he does. All of those things because of his truth, see. The banner of love was displayed, that it may be displayed because of the truth. Selah. Song of Solomon 2:4 also. And John 3:16. In case you wonder what that is. Isaiah 13:2-6. And John 15:12-17. That thy beloved may be delivered, save thy right hand. Now, whether it's with thy right hand, the word with doesn't seem to be there. It's all right with it, it's all right without it. If it's save thy right hand, they're praying for the salvation of the Lord Jesus. See, for his salvation, for his resurrection, to him to be raised up and made captain of our salvation. If it's just saved with thy right hand, that's everybody, including all. And it does include all, so we might as well leave it the way it is, save with thy right hand, save all. But specifically having reference also to that one that calls upon God and is perfect in his trust in God, so that God in him could be well pleased and through him save the rest of us. That's the import of the whole thing there. Now, from here on, from 5 to the end, is practically identical with Psalm 108, 6 to 13. You'll find it there. There's very slight difference there, but you won't notice it unless you know it's there. Now, that thy beloved may be delivered, save with thy right hand and hear me. There is this difference in Psalm 108, 6. It says, answer me, which is one and the same thing. Although one and the same thing almost. Answer is better than hear. Somebody hears but they don't answer, it's not so good. But if he answers you, that does it. See? If we call and he doesn't answer, that's because he can't hear us. We're just too far away from him. But when he answers us, then we know we have the answer. God, so it's better in 108. God hath spoken in his holiness. Some would probably say out of his sanctuary, but that's all right, or in his sanctuary, and that would be his people. He answers, in his people, in his temple. We are the temple of God, each one of us being members of that building and members of his body, and each one being a temple of the Lord individually. God has spoken in his holiness, I will rejoice. This is what God says. God says, I will rejoice, I will divide Shechem. Joshua 1:6, and also he told Shechem, you see, is right in the very center of the land of Palestine. It's right in the center of Canaan. And it is that place and the only place that Jacob ever took with his sword and with his own power. And he promised that down in... He didn't do that. He did that out of necessity when his sons did certain things. The enemy did wrong things to Dinah, their sister. Therefore, their sons went out and slew the Shechemites after making a bargain with them, but they were not honest in their dealings. They were subtle. And they destroyed them. And so, actually, Jacob recognized that by his sword he took it and took their territory as well as that city, Shechem. And he promised it to David, to Joseph down in Egypt. The very last thing he promised him there in Genesis 49, he gave him an extra portion that he took with his sword and his bow. And that's the only place he ever did take. That's Shechem. That's right the middle of Palestine. You see, they'd never been there. I mean, to take it. This is before they ever come out of Egypt. So he has, I will divide Shechem. And he did. When they got up into the land, he divided all that land among all his people there. But he gave a certain portion to Joseph, and he gave that particular portion to Joseph. And Joseph, in fact, was buried there. Joseph was buried there. In spite of the New Testament telling you someplace that he was buried someplace else, perhaps, he was buried in Shechem, in the very place that Abraham bought. As you remember the sheet of paper that I gave you concerning the two burial places? How many still have it? How many still remember it? All right. If you don't have it and any of you want it, I still have some copies left in there that will help you from making some mistakes that have been made on that and show you about the two burial places. But that's what he's talking about here. I will divide Shechem and mete out or measure out the valley of Succoth. Now, the valley of Succoth lies across the Jordan in the land of Gad, just opposite Shechem. And when they came up into the land, it's one of the first places that God did measure out and gave it to Gad, his portion. And it's very possible that Manasseh got a portion of it, It's very possible that Reuben may have got a little portion of it, just how big the valley of Succoth is, it is hard to discern. What's your problem, Tom? That is when it's divided in Gad. Now, Gilead is mine, and Manasseh is mine. Ephraim also is the strength of my head. Judah is my lawgiver. How about all the rest of them? Well, this is one of those places where we see these particular four. These particular four. Now you say, well, I don't see four there, particular. Well, in Obadiah, he tells you that Benjamin will have the land of Gilead. Remember? In Obadiah, he tells you that Benjamin shall have Gilead. That's not until the end. So here, if he had said, Benjamin is mine, Manasseh is mine, Ephraim also is the strength of my head, Judah is my lawgiver, it would have been the same thing. But he said Gilead here. You see, it's one of those ways that God oftentimes has of just hiding something. And you have to know something else in order to know it. But it is exactly the same thing, because when you read the last of Obadiah, you'll find out that he divides. From the 18th verse on, you'll find out he divides among Judah, Manasseh, and Ephraim, and Benjamin. He mentions those. Not but what the others are going to have a portion also. They will. But he mentions specifically these four, as he does so many other places. Come and save us, see. Psalm 80, I believe it is. Psalm 80, verse 1. It's not far away. I might turn over and look at it. It just comes to my mind now. I don't think they even have it down here. Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock. How about the rest of them? Thou that dwellest between the cherubim, shine forth before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh. Stir up. You see, that's awake. Stir up thy strength and come and save us. See, there it is again. Same four. Joseph is Ephraim and Manasseh. Then Benjamin. And here, because of the coming into Christ, Judah is not mentioned here, because Judah is not in that out translation. He is not saved when they're saved. In that day, Judah shall be saved and Israel shall rejoice. You remember the difference? That's speaking of the end time. So is this up here. Let's look at it again. Gilead is mine. Manasseh is mine. Ephraim also is the strength of my head. Zechariah 10, 6 to 8. And Jeremiah 31:9. You see, Ephraim has a special place. Ephraim is my firstborn. The birthright was Joseph's. So it passed to Ephraim, because the first blessing was upon Ephraim by the crossing of Jacob's hands. So the birthright passed to Ephraim. And he says there that Ephraim is my firstborn. Now, the choice one, gets the greater portion, gets the better blessings, because he came into the church ahead of the others, ahead of Judah. Judah is my lawgiver, so that in the time when they rule over the land, Judah is the principal one. I'd rather be Ephraim and Israel, because they're with the Lord in the glory, and they're actually the one that has the power, but the power is imparted to Judah, and in the land, he is judging the people. He has the natural territory. He has all that wonderful place. As wonderful it's going to be down here. I don't want to be down here during the millennium. I want to be with the Lord Jesus. That's the bride's portion. That's the bride's portion. That's Israel's portion of those who obtain it out of Israel. The rest of them, they go into Judah and obtain the carnal portion. Their portion is in the land. They're not Levites, therefore. See? They're not Levites. They are like Levites' portion is in the Lord. He had no land portion. And the church, the overcoming church, the bride, the elders, their portion is in the Lord. Their portion is with Him in His throne. But the others, they have their portion in the land, just like they did back there. And that's Judah of the end time. And that's why Judah is said to be His lawgiver, not only for that reason, but because also out of Jerusalem and through Christ who was of Judah, that's where the Messiah came in part. He also came out of Joseph, and that's manifested also from thence as the stone, the shepherd of Israel, the shepherd, the stone of Israel. See, way back in Genesis 50. From thence is the shepherd the stone of Israel, because Joseph's hands are made, arms are made, hands are made strong. Let's see, his arms are made strong by the hands of the mighty. His hands are made strong. And the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd. That is the great shepherd, Christ. The stone of Israel, which is laid before them and becomes a stumbling block unto both houses. Becomes a stumbling block unto both houses. A stumbling stone unto both houses in measure, but especially to Judah. Now, with the Ephraim also, Judah is my lawgiver. Moab is my washpot. There we see it again. Over here, he will wash his feet in the blood of the wicked. In verse 10 of 58:10, and then Genesis 49:11, as I gave you before, but you need it here too. Isaiah 6:3-1, Isaiah 63:1, pardon me, Isaiah 63:1, Revelation 19:15. Moab is my washpot. There's where he washes his feet in the blood of his enemies. And if you want to see how it's done, take a look at Obadiah. Take a look at the last of all the prophecies of Moab and Edom in Jeremiah and in Isaiah, and you'll have it. Second Samuel 8:2 takes you right back to where we were in the Psalm just a few minutes ago, to where David first begins to take power over Moab. But this up here, you see, doesn't apply to that back there. That was only a type and a figure. But the end of it is way up here in the end, as we'll notice. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. You see, that's a future thing. That is, I will trample them down. I'll tread upon the wicked, as it is in Malachi 3:4. Philistia, triumph thou because of me. Literally, over Philistia will I triumph. I think Rotherham probably says over Philistia, a shout of triumph. But and another understanding of that is this: triumph thou because of me. In another place in the scripture it says, glory, glory in me. Glory in me. In other words, give me glory. Give me glory. Acknowledge me. Humble yourself before me. See, I mean, bow before me. In the sense, not giving up, not submitting, and not changing, but submit yourself. Bow down. Lay down with your face on the ground. Glorify me. See, give me glory. And that is possibly the short meaning of that. Triumph thou because of me. In other words, give me glory, not for them to triumph, but glorify, not triumph. See, glorify me. But the other understanding is, over Philistia will I triumph, because other prophecies tell us so, very plainly. In fact, 108:9. Take a look at it. Psalm 108:9 will give you another Bible translation of it, exactly correct. Psalm 108:9 is undoubtedly the correct. Now you see, this is the same thing. Notice verse 8. Gilead is mine, Manasseh is mine, Ephraim also is the strength of my head, Judah is my lawgiver. Psalm 60 and 7, see right back where we are. And Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. Over Philistia will I triumph. There it is, translated for you. See? And that is the preferable one, because that's the one that's given here right in the book. But it means the same thing that we've been saying in other ways. This one's translated for you. Over Philistia will I triumph. Who will bring me into the strong city? He's speaking of Edom now, you see, Moab and Edom. And their strong city was Petra. That very strong city and hard to over. So to them they related it, you see, to that, because they did have a strong city. Their nest was built in the rocks. It tells you in another place. They set their nest as an eagle in the rocks, but God would bring them down. And way back in Samuel, who will bring me into the strong city? Who will lead me into Edom? And it doesn't just mean Edom alone, it means the stronghold of the enemy, the strongest fortifications of the enemy, wherever it is, in spiritual things. Because our warfare is not carnal now, it is spiritual. Against principality and against powers, against spiritual wickedness in high places and in the rocks, in the fortifications of men, down here, against all wicked nations, and against our enemy, the devil, and against all his forces, and against all his spiritual powers. So it reaches to all of that. Who will bring me into the strong city of the enemy? Who will take these things, can take these from the devil, seeing that he rules over most of the earth? Seeing that most of the people are serving him. Who can make war against the beast? Who will do that? Who will lead me into the strong city? Who will lead me into Egypt? Well, it tells you that the Lord Jesus will. They make war against the Lamb, but the Lamb shall overcome them. Revelation. 2 Corinthians 10:4. Look at it quickly. Second Corinthians 10:4. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations. You see, we've been reading also about imaginations in the Psalm. Somehow these Psalm and Ezekiel and all these seem to run right together all the time. They just are using the same things almost as we are reading them. How it happens, I don't know, except for the fact that God has put it in here in so many places, so many ways, you can't escape it. You can't escape it if your spiritual eyes and ears are open. Can't escape it. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled, then God will take vengeance upon your enemy. Wilt not thou, O God, which hadst cast us off, and thou, O God, which didst not go out with our armies? When? When did he cast them off? Not at the writing of this psalm. You see, that is a prophecy speaking of those things that are not as though they were, as though it had already been. They say, what's he talking about? What's he talking about? Well, it's yet to come, because the time will come when you'll be looking back at it. Wilt not thou, O God, which hadst in the past tense, cast us off? And thou, O God, which didst not go out with our armies? But you notice in 108:11, in Psalm 108:11, again, there's a little difference there. Who will bring me into the strong city? Who will lead me into Edom? Wilt not thou, O God, who hast, you have, and you have continually now for a long time. See? It's a continuing thing. There it was spoken of as a past thing, because they're looking back at it now, because when the prophecy is fulfilled, they'll look back at it. But now, when it comes up here, thou hast and have been for a long time. You see, it's already passed now when we look at it from way up here now. It's already taken place. He did cast them off. He did cast them off. He did refuse to go out with their enemies, with them against their enemy, but rather took part with their enemies against them when he cast them off into Babylon and so on, Syria. God was against them. But now, wilt not thou, O God, who hast in time past cast us off and hast continually, and wilt not thou, you see, it's still future, O God, go forth with our hosts? Won't you? Will you? See, the other said he did not. Well, there was a time he did not, typifying up here in the end of time that unless we turn to him, he will not. But now, will you? Wilt thou, O God, go forth with our hosts? And Psalm 60:10 tells you he will. Other places tell you that he will. Give us help from trouble, for vain is the help of man. Daniel 12:1. It's a time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall. It's a time of trouble such as never was. Daniel 12:1 says, and Jeremiah, he tells you it's the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. And then in Daniel 11:34, they'll be helped. They'll be helped with a little help when they fall. Vain is the help of man, which of course we learn from 118:8, the central verse of the Bible. Vain is the help of man. It's better to put your trust in the Lord than to put your trust in man. And a word help of man is in the Hebrew probably salvation of man, for man to save you. Better to have the Lord save you, as in the our trust is in God in the verse just before that. Let me see where I am. Through God we will do valiantly. Numbers 24:18 and Psalm 118:16. For he it is that shall tread down our enemies. And the first one in Numbers tells you that Israel shall do valiantly against her enemies and shall succeed. Way back there before ever they come into the land. The other one tells you in 118:16, while they're in the land and reaches clear down to the end of time, and as it did before here, show you that you will have indeed the victory.
Thank you.
I'll get the one that I think I picked you up on in the office now. And I'll give you
I came in last night to listen to the tape for Monday, you know, and it was on there. The bus only had been outside then, you know, so I didn't know about the
tape. You
know, I could have it in my rider,
I'll bring some over. You're in the next class, Logan.
Yeah.
You're not in the next class?
I'm not either.
In the office then, ask them to give you that test for Monday on the top.